مالا نلقاكم مال 16 لقى هل عندي مش من الملوتي مبات تال European and the Foreign European Affairs Committee نطلب في المنوتي يجوا أبروفاتي نكمنيش كومنت فوق المنوتي هنوضع بلو ما أبروفاتي ما بك لست طيب سيجي لويس هونك Alright. Mr. Stefkovic, I welcome you to, well, you've already been shown around the Maltese Parliament, so not to the Parliament building, but to the committee, the Foreign and European Affairs Committee of the Parliament of Malta. It's a great privilege for us to have you here, because we are very much, as you know, our country, we are both parties, both main parties, and practically all parties in Malta are pro-European now. So we don't have major Eurosceptic blocs within the country. Which is not to say that the European Union and the Commission can take us for granted. Because, as you know, there have been and will continue to be points that we will need to argue. And I think this is healthy and this is something that we look forward to. But your presence here today is a clear signal from the Commission of how the Commission in general, and you in particular, are giving importance to national parliaments, not just as part and parcel of the European Union, but as participants within the European decision-making process. As you know, our Parliament hasn't, in the past years, been very active in the region of subsidiarity. In fact, 2011-2012, we've only had two recent opinions from this Parliament. But in the last few months, specifically since this committee has been reconvened after the general elections, we've increased, I would say dramatically, the number of recent opinions that we are sending from this Parliament. In fact, over the last 6 months, we've had 7 recent opinions. I know this is below European average, but compared to in a year, we've come up in number significantly. And I'm sure over the next months and years, we will continue to produce these recent opinions. I have to say, and I have to be frank about this, that, and I'm sure you've heard this from other parliaments as well, that the question of the yellow card on the EPPO has left a bit of a bad taste in our mouths. The Maltese Parliament is in favour of having a stronger anti-fraud office for the European Commission, and of course we recognise that the EPPO is one of the Lisbon Treaty requirements. However, the way that our collective recent opinions, enough to trigger a yellow card, was treated, I feel, rather maybe briskly, briskly not in a positive sense, by the Union, by the Commission, has left a bit of disappointment from our part. So I think it's given a bit of credence to those of us who have felt that the principle of subsidiarity and yellow cards was just the European Commission paying lip service to the national parliaments, which I'm sure is not what you believe, and I'm sure is not what the situation is or really ought to be. So I would like to hear your comments on this issue, and I look forward to other instances. Hopefully there won't be need for more yellow cards, but I look forward to if there is another instance that maybe we can have better cooperation in discussing the way forward after a yellow card has been issued. As regards the scrutiny of EU documents, we are very grateful to receive directly as a parliament the documents from all the institutions of the European Union. This is, of course, a lot of work for our officials, but it's the work that we welcome and that we are very glad of. The only problem we have, it's not really a problem, but it's something which we need to highlight, is that this is a reactive process, that we receive communications or regulations which we then react to. And therefore, I think it would be a better solution for all of us, and something which will bring the European institutions closer to the citizens of our countries, if we can have a proactive, maybe pre-legislative process in which as members, as a parliament of a member state, we can have direct discussions with the Commission. As you are aware, because you were on Monday at the Cossack meeting, last Saturday, a number of southern European member states, basically the Mediterranean states and Portugal, we've set up an informal group of southern EU European committee members. And the reason we've felt the need to do this is that as southern European countries and parliaments, we have at times felt that the agenda in general of the European Commission was straying a bit from what we felt was a southern agenda. The scope behind this gathering, and as you are aware, we will be meeting as a southern European group before every COSAC meeting, so twice a year before the chairman's meeting. The scope of all this is not to create a divide between North and South, but to enable countries in the southern part of Europe and in the Mediterranean countries to feel more at home and to feel more part of the whole European process. So you have to see this development as a positive development, something which would, I think, bring not just the perception, but certainly the perception that the European Commission and the European institutions are closer even to the people of the South. We've decided that the four main priorities to cooperate between ourselves on are very close, in fact, to the priorities of the Greek presidency. So, and very close to a lot of principles which you already, as a commissioner, are familiar with. So basically economic recovery, youth employment, the maritime sector and the importance of the maritime sector, not just to maritime countries like Malta, but to the European Union as a whole, because sometimes there's the feeling that landlocked countries forget that the maritime sector is an important aspect of the European economy, but mostly the question of illegal immigration. And I was very pleased to hear Mr. Venizelos, the Greek foreign minister, describe how one of the priorities of the Greek presidency is, in fact, tackling the question of illegal immigration, and specifically the way that we feel that the legal framework of the Dublin II is limiting the scope of our way forward as regards trying to find a solution to the question of illegal immigration. Finally, Mr. Vice President, I would like to ask your opinion and maybe also your suggestions on one way which I feel is a possible way forward for the national parliaments to become closer to European process making or decision making. And basically, this is, as you know, the COSAC meetings are very important. However, they have a somewhat structured feel to them. And sometimes participants feel that discussions are too superficial and people go to COSAC meetings and have 1 minute time to speak. So we, as you know, and I think you were present also for the meeting we had in Vilnius, inter-parliamentary, possibly topic-specific meetings, I think, is one possible way forward to allow the parliament, national parliamentarians better say. They have been and they will continue to be happening on the fringes of COSAC, but possibly standalone topic-specific inter-parliamentary meetings should be organized. And I suspect it would be very useful if yourself or someone else from the Commission or from your team would be able to attend these meetings and possibly even be proactive in helping to organize them. I know your time is limited, so I'd like to stop here, maybe hear some reaction from your side, and then we'll have comments from the rest of the committee. Thank you very much. Say that if you don't mind, this is being webcast live, so I can ask you to.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate your invitation, not only to your parliament, but also to your country. For me, it was the whole day like walking in the open-air museum, I have to say. Yeah, so it's really very, very, very impressive, and I can imagine how beautiful it must be in summer. But thank you very much also for the opportunity to meet with you, with your colleagues, parliamentarians, and just a quick reaction to some of the topics you suggested. And then, of course, if there will be a subsequent exchange of views, I would very much appreciate that. I am very much impressed by the Maltese European positions, but also by the fact how you managed to mobilize your citizens. Because, I mean, to have such a high turnout in the election, I think it's very impressive. At the same time, I think it shows how your democratic system is healthy and how you are well connected with the citizens, who feel this very direct link to the people they elect. And this is something what I think is the best recipe for what we now see in Europe. It's very much such a frustration of the citizens, feeling of crisis towards the elites, because it's not only the feeling that the politicians on European or national level didn't manage, but there was also the feeling of such a lack of confidence towards economic elites, towards bankers, towards multinationals, creating the profit in one country and paying taxes somewhere in a fiscal paradise in Caribbean or elsewhere. So there was a lot of things which happened over the last 5 years, and therefore, I mean, to reconnect with the citizens is very, very important. And here you have this good recipe that the people participate, come, they're interested in this process, and I think that's very good, and that's very, very appreciated. We also clearly noted in the Commission that your increased involvement in European affairs, and I know, because I'm also from small country, that it's always a challenge for the Parliament. We are usually not that equipped with experts who are helping the Parliament, as all the parliaments of the bigger member states or the countries like Denmark, where that was for decades and decades build up the tradition of the Grand Committee, where I think the support staff is around 100 experts. So I think this is something what, I mean, we do not have in my country, and I don't think that you have it in Malta either. So therefore, I think what is very important, of course, to do is to be focused on what is important, on what is of a key interest for your country, for your parliament in the future. And therefore, if you allow just a quick reaction on the yellow card, but also on this prosecutor proposal, I agree with you 100% that the yellow card is a reactive mechanism. And it was built in the treaty to give clearly the national parliaments the possibility to check the subsidiarity and to, let's say, ring the alarm bell that something is there what we are not happy about, what we don't agree with. But I think, and that I agree with you, the better thing would be to spend, I would say, most of the energy on proactive agenda. And this is what I think we wanted to initiate when President Barroso for the first time felt, I think it was already in 2006, that we need much more interaction with the national parliament. So at that time it was such an attempt to start the political dialogue, to get into the direct contacts between the Commission and the national parliaments, and more or less to create the opportunity for the national parliaments to react on any of the issue which is on the agenda, be it legal, be it political, be it of a special bilateral nature between the Commission and the country of the national parliament. And we have seen that especially over the last 2-3 years that this exchange became much more intense than before. Now we have, I think the, in 2012 we had 663 opinions from all the parliaments. The last year we had 592, so I think it would be a safe bet to say that this is somehow stabilizing around the number of 600 opinions we are getting from the all parliaments. The fact is that we also see that the number of reasoned opinions, meaning the yellow card triggers, is increased. In most cases, we do not get more than two or three reasoned opinion per proposal. But of course, in the case of EPPO, you rightly said that there was a yellow card trigger. There was as especially designed for this type of a proposal because it concerns justice and home affairs. There is one fourth, not one third, of the chambers. And I can tell you that we've been very much aware that this would be a very sensitive issue. And we also wanted to learn, I believe we did, from the first yellow card, which was triggered on Monti 2 legislation, which was about, if I oversimplify, right to strike, where we withdrew the proposal, but at the same time we've been criticized by several parliaments that politically we withdrew, but the explanatory memorandum, which later on was provided, was, let's say, not of a better quality. This time we tried to do it better. And why we've been, let's say, so quick with reply? It was because we know that the time is very short. That I mean, the European Parliament will complete its work in April. And because we have also seen that, as you correctly said, this is still some kind of leftover from the Lisbon Treaty, something what is there, what we should have done, and we have very limited time frame to do it. Then, of course, coming to the argument, I think why we thought that this should be done in the form of EPPO and that structure. I think, again, it comes from the, I would say, quite thorough analysis how, weak still the system of enforcement of appropriate or proper use of EU money is. We have very low recovery rate if it comes to investigating the fraud with the EU finances. We have only, I think, 20% of the cases which is actually prosecuted. We have only around 40% of the cases which are handed by Olaf to the national investigators, which are actually brought in front of court. And overall, I would say the efficiency of the system is very, very low. And we've been very much criticized for that by quite a few national governments, usually by those who are criticizing us the most for yellow card, like, for example, Netherlands, that, you know, how do you manage the money, how do you recover? You probably also remember Louis for sure, because it's very often in a General Affairs Council that we are criticized that we cannot provide so-called discharge for the whole budget spending, that we spend the money correctly. And the reason is because, of course, the most of the money is spent nationally, and not every country has a system where they can, like the Minister of Finance is ready to present the discharge, the money, that he guarantees, he signs that the money has been spent correctly. And then, of course, we've been trying to analyze the reason. Why is it the case? And we, when you listen to the policemen, to the investigator, to the judges and prosecutors, more or less what you hear is, very often we have, of course, different prosecution legal orders. We have still, which is surprising, but it's the case, the problem how to admit the materials for the court, what is considered to be proof, to be evidence, how you exchange this information, what would be admissible in court or not. So a lot of these materials and investigation work is actually lost in the process, and it's one of the reasons why the prosecution rates are so low. So the idea there was to have one European prosecutor who would like oversee this process, but his work would be absolutely embedded and linked to the network of the national prosecutors, because it's quite clear that without cooperation with the national prosecutors or national attorneys, you cannot proceed, you cannot progress. So that was the idea, that you would have this link between European and national, and the national prosecutors, who are of course nominated by the national governments, who work as the national prosecutors or attorneys, will be part of the structure which should be light, which should be very, very efficient. So this was the proposal, and then of course we are coming to such a, I would say, a democratic element in this, that you are absolutely right that there was 14, it was I think 18 chambers, so one fourth of chambers being against this proposal. But at the same time, once the yellow card was triggered, we had a meeting where the government's been represented, that this is the happening. We of course also want to listen to you, and we got the clear majority backing for continuing with this proposal. And even in some cases, like for example in the case of French Senna, the Senna was for the yellow card, but French government clearly told us that they would like to continue. So that was a bit of a dilemma, you know, how to do it concerning the argumentative side of the process, concerning the time because of the incoming elections, and also respecting the fact that we have a problem and the majority of the member states would like to solve it. So what I expect that would happen right now would be that the discussion on this proposal started. They've been, I would say, much better on the level of working group and the ministers of justice that you would expect based on the yellow card procedure. But I'm also quite sure that there is no way how we can achieve unanimity with this proposal. And therefore, because you probably would remember when the Lisbon Treaty was drafted, that was already one of the expectation, it will be very difficult to get the unanimity on this proposal. Therefore, there is built in that article the possibility to proceed with enhanced cooperation. That who would be comfortable with this process, who would like to continue. And the proposal you raised, that do we need at only one level? Maybe we should base it only on the network of the prosecutors. It I'm sure it would be still one of the option in the process, because we made the proposal, but of course the member states and the European Parliament would have to agree if this is the final shape or if this should be adjusted. And answering to your question, that what is such a, I would say, major importance for parliaments being active in a political dialogue and in a yellow card procedure, because I think it's very helpful not only to the Commission but also to all member states and national parliaments and European Parliament as well, to see how it is viewed, how is it perceived, that if we want to continue with the debate or on this particular file, that what have been the particular sensitivities, what we should address in the next process, how we can actually improve that proposal, that in the end we will be able to get the support also from those who've been feeling that not all the elements of subsidiarity are respected. And it was already very helpful, because we changed our procedure in the Commission, thanks also to the yellow card procedure. So now we are preparing all legislative proposals through quite demanding and tough impact assessment process, where the subsidiarity check, our internal one, is part of that process. And we are sending back to the desks, to the experts, to rewrite more than 30% of initial proposals. And this is one segment which is particularly checked. So I agree with you that I hope that the yellow card will not be triggered very often, even though, if I may use one comment. Sometime when I, it's definitely not the case of your parliament, but if I talk to some other parliaments, they see the yellow card as some kind of prevention against the competence enlargement of the Commission. So they just want to to trigger it, even despite, I would say, the quite reasonable reasoning behind the proposal, because they see there's some kind of barrier against the increase of the competencies of the commission, which goes well together with those delegations which say that we should put stop to ever closer union, which is in the treaty, and things like that. So sometimes I am not so sure that it's used really just because of the subsidiarity evaluation as such, but for like political messaging that we just simply do not want that the EU powers would be spread would be spread to other areas. So another thing, what very often I hear in COSAC was the complaint about the time. I was also reacting to it also on Monday. And there the fact is, and if you would feel that it didn't improve, please let me know, because we are trying very much to increase the speed with which we answer to your letters. So I think now we are, the last 3-4 months we managed to get to this threshold of 3 months. I'm very much pushing the services to respect the deadline. Hopefully it would work, because we completely changed the system, IT and everything. So I hope it will happen. And speaking about COSAC, I agree with you that from one side you cannot avoid this big assembly, because this is where the debate is taking place, and simply all the delegations are present there, and you need the place for the debate. From other side, I also understand that to travel across half of the Europe for 1 minute of a speaking time, I mean, it's not something which the chairs of the committees are very much looking to. So I think that the meeting like was organized by Lord Boswell or something which is smaller, when the people who are like attracted to one particular topic are there, and it could be much more interactive, and when the commission can contribute by all commissioner presence or expert presence, which for example House of Lords did, just for your information, did a special hearing on financial services, and they wanted to have expert view. So they asked us, can you provide us with the experts who are actually writing this proposal for the legislation? So we did, and they've been delighted, because it was very technical, it was very, very much based on expertise, and at least, I don't know if they wanted to please me, but I was happy to hear it, that then they've been very well prepared for the hearings with their own experts, with their own ministers, and that the feeling was that it was very, very useful for them. So if there is, from your side, the need to have like thematic debate or something very, very specific, and you would prefer expert presence here, I will be very happy to organize it for you. Or if you think that something like this would be useful at one of the COSAC meetings, where you, or for this southern group, or for the any group of the MPs or member states with a particular topic which you would like to discuss, I mean, we are ready for it. We can do it on political level, we can do it on expert level, and this is something which is practical and which is more interactive, and when everybody can participate, then it's of course much more useful. And if you allow me with one, I would say, such a issue which I believe will stay with us also after the big changes in the EU we will have, mostly the personal ones. I think that and you already opened the topic, therefore I'm just concluding by this, that for sure that for the next legislature, what would be one of the most important political challenges would be how to find appropriate balance of democratic scrutiny between European Parliament, national parliaments, especially in the area of economic governance. Because you are the Eurozone member state, so I believe that there the economic and monetary union will be that's ongoing work. I think it will be deeper. There will be more coordination in the future. I think there will be the European semester, national semester, and draft national budget scrutiny procedures, they will continue. And I understand that this is something what was traditionally always sovereign prerogative of the national parliaments, and now it has more and more of a European flavor. So that's very clear that if you want to succeed with this process, if you just don't want to have a European semester to be concluded by the country-specific recommendation endorsement by the European Council in July, but to have actual action on the ground, we cannot do it without ownership of this process by the national parliaments, by the national governments, because they must be convinced and feel that this is good for the country, that this is good for our people, and that this is something what we can do together. And that would be, I think, the political challenge of the next year. How can we reconnect these two processes, and how can we actually make sure that this process is not seen or felt or perceived, which was certainly the case at the beginning, that the Commission is trying to impose something on you, that this is actually the common effort, common task, that we are reforming the member states, and by reforming the member states, we are increasing the competitiveness of Europe. So that would be, I think, the challenge, and the question would be, can we do it on the political level? Can we do it without the changing of the treaties? Can we find that arrangement? And I believe we will find the answer to this, because despite the crisis, I think we moved enormous political distance in the last 3-4 years, and the pace of the coordination was increased so much that now I think we have to build this political framework which would provide this additional democratic scrutiny and this feeling that this is co-owned, that this is done together, that you would not have the feeling what Martin Schulz calls the deparlamentarization of the process, because this is not good for anybody. And I know it very well that the Commission would never be able to connect to the citizens against the will of the national parliaments and national government. It must be joint effort, because we would never be able to do this, because the first reference point will always be to the nationally elected representative, and therefore it must be a joint effort. So thank you very much for the patience. I hope I was not too long, but I'm very glad that I got your invitation, and I can share this time with you. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your comments and for answering some of our queries. I'd like to ask the members of the committee for any other interventions at the moment. Dr. Portelli.
First of all, obviously, I would like to thank you for being with us here. I feel it is a privilege for us to be able to talk directly to you, express our ideas on certain matters, but also to share with you some of our concerns. At the end of the day, they are concerns which, in our opinion, are common matters both to EU and to Malta as an island. I think that we have to register the fact that the majority, Malta, is grateful for EU membership, and we have seen that Malta has benefited a lot from EU membership. However, there are still other areas where we feel that more effort needs to be done, that where a better understanding of the Maltese scenario maybe needs to be there, and more help to communicate exactly what Malta would be going through. And one of the issues is irregular immigration. So whilst we understand that a lot of discussions have taken place, we have seen progress on the matter as well. However, we still feel that Malta is not being helped out as much as it should. So if you could give us some of your time maybe to discuss more with us the issue of burden sharing and what is envisaged to happen within EU level, we would appreciate that a lot.
Thank you, Dr. Portelli. Dr. Sudbonici.
If you allow me, on this particular point of irregular immigration, we are particularly concerned on the question of relocating persons within the European Union. This is persons who are with refugee status or humanitarian status, and we are not seeing that there is enough take-up from different member states. So we would like to use this opportunity to show you how sensitive we are on this matter and how much we feel that it is part of Europe's mission to help small countries like ourselves in a solidarity measure, so that we can give these unfortunate people a future which they surely would need. Malta has been doing its best in the past years, and as you know, it is very difficult to integrate these people in this community because most of them intend to go to mainland Europe. So a help from different member states would surely be good, and we are trying to use this opportunity to be with you to get you more aware and sensitive of how difficult it is here. I'm sure that maybe our government has already given you the statistics of how many persons have arrived in this country and what they would mean for larger countries. Okay, so pro rata, someone would come to Malta would be equivalent to 200,000 in France or in Germany. But being a small country with a very strong demographic requirement and numbers, it is surely a very big issue. So we would like you to move forward on that. Secondly, I'm speaking about this interaction with national parliaments. What are your reflections? You know, we are still maybe in infancy, but what are your reflections? Is the system working or is it not working? Does it need fine-tuning? What would the fine-tuning be to have a better system whereby national parliaments can interact in the European process and to have a different approach even from the Commission towards different national parliaments? It's positive that you are here, but I'm sure that we will not have you or someone from the Commission coming in every year. So I think that we need maybe to think more, to rethink on what the experience has been, where we are going, and what we have managed to achieve so far. So there, I would, if you are in a position to give your frank opinion on that, it would be most welcome. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner.
Thank you very much. Dr. Farrugia.
On the same subject as my colleagues, I would like to ask you if there has been any exploration of the possibility of these irregular immigrants that we're talking about can seek asylum without having to cross the dangerous seas. Has there been any communication whatsoever with the possibility of having a European structure in North Africa, in Libya, for instance, so that they can seek asylum there without having to cross? This is just a question, but I think that possibility should be explored. And on the same subject, pushbacks and sending them back is out of the question. The volatility in North Africa and most of the African continent is what it is. So it is a question of at what stage will European citizenship be granted to these poor, illegal, irregular immigrants? Because that is what the EU Commission should be looking at what stage? Because we are seeking burden sharing, but if these people cannot be sent back, these people, we owe them a life as well. If we are going to abide by the principles of solidarity, and these people are currently residing in Malta, but they need a life, their families need a life. So, at what stage will Europe make the necessary decisions? Thank you, and welcome to Malta.
Basically, I have a meeting with Maros every month, so I don't think I'll take any. But the only thing I would like to say that Maros is very much aware of the migration problem, and he's very supportive of putting migration on top of the agenda. In fact, during our meetings, he was always from the Commission side saying that this should be really, Europe should do more, and we should really tackle this as a priority. On the question on the other issue you mentioned on in terms of the relationship between the member states and the Commission and national parliaments, I think that is an extremely valid point, valid question. And I think Maros could explain a bit more on the kind of relationship you're trying to build. I mean, because I know that you're trying to create a mechanism, especially the early warning instruments that we talked about during two GAC meetings. And possibly Maros could also give us a view about the EP elections, because he's also very much involved in that area. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Reg. Just maybe before I just one or two small points that from your comments. Back to the subsidiarity, you mentioned the time frame. Can I just ask you, is there any possibility of extending the time frame given to national parliaments, the 8-week period, in which time we can respond to the subsidiarity check? Because for small parliaments like us, with limited technical staff, it can be taxing to meet the deadline. The other point is about the CSRs that you mentioned, the country-specific recommendations. I think the key word here that you mentioned yourself is ownership by the national government and by the national parliament. And I think for that ownership to happen, it would be advisable to discuss the CSRs before they are actually presented to government, and possibly to have them less prescriptive than they are, which means giving the national governments some leniency in reaching the targets that are prescribed by the Commission. Vice President, maybe you can have, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, and then we can... Okay.
Just one small point from my side. First of all, thanks again. Like my colleague said, welcome to Malta. I hope that you liked our country. Actually, I liked your comment at the beginning of your intervention that you've toured an open-air museum. I'm sure that you haven't had the opportunity to see all of this museum. Earlier, colleague Dr. Portelli has said that the Maltese can now really appreciate the benefits of the European Union accession, in particular also when it comes to infrastructural project and the beauty of our country when it comes to the utilization of European Union funds, which have helped by no uncertain terms the country in its development, infrastructurally in particular. Of course, as part of the Commission, you are aware that now we are in the phase where the operational programs are being discussed and eventually agreed upon. I urge the Commission and the local government, of course, to close off this process so that our people and our organizations and most of all our government will be in a position to start utilizing the 1.2 billion funds which are available for us for the next 7 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Borch. Vice President, maybe you can have your concluding remarks.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. No, thank you very much for the questions, because I think that Madam Portelli, Mr. Bonici, and also Madam Farage, they've been tackling the issue, which I think you made it very clear, but also I have to say that your representatives are working very hard on it, and Louise is very clear and very vocal on this on every General Affairs Council, because it's true, you are particularly exposed to the migration pressure. You are here as a, I would say, outpost, which is, I would say, like on the first line of this immigration pressure in the Mediterranean. And of course, so when we have seen the first happy pictures linked to the Arab Spring, we had been very, very hopeful that it would lead to the more prosperity, more stability, and that it would be overall positive developments. Now we see that this is not the case, and we have seen that actually led to the increased number of migrants to Europe. It's clear that it's not Maltese problem, that this is European problem. We feel like this very much in the Commission. We are, of course, trying to help you, as much as we can, also through the financial assistance. But I know that this is not only thing what you need. That the fair burden sharing would be something which would be much more appreciative, and that you would need to have it faster. The fact is that we haven't get across that hurdle, that it's very difficult to impose the burden sharing quotas on the member states, but the process is going on. It's very much discussed. I mean, we've seen that there are some countries like Sweden, Germany, which are really, I would say, showing example, and I think that this will be a topic which would be permanently on the agenda, and I think it's very good that you make it so clear how difficult it is for your country. You know that within the Commission we are now working on a little bit what we hope would be more complex approach to the situation in the Mediterranean, especially in the field of migration. I think the Lampedusa tragedy was this final trigger which really made everybody in the European Union, each member state, much more attentive to this problem. And we are trying to use what I have to be very honest about are the limited resources of the European Commission, because if it comes to the ships, to all the, I would say, tracking devices, satellite technology, and so on and so forth, here we have to rely very much on the assets of the member states, and we are now trying also to boost the ability of Frontex to be more active, to be more present, and to bring better results for all the countries in the Mediterranean. But I agree with you, what we need is to link all these efforts with the action on the ground in the third countries from which mostly we are getting these migratory waves. We are the biggest technical or development assistance provider in the world. We need to be much more present in those countries where we know there are sources of the migration. We should try to stabilize the situation there. We should be much more forceful if it comes to different kind of smuggling gangs with the people, and we should be in much more intense contacts with those countries where we know that they are like letting all this simply go in the way of Europe. And at the same time, I also agree with you, we have to adjust our immigration and asylum system in a way that those who deserve it, those who are like legally, lawfully applying for it, those to whom we have to show our humanitarian protection, in that case we should be able to process them much, much faster than we do. But again, this is from one side, I would say technically and politically, I would say very, very clear, but from other side, to be quite honest, there is also this psychological barrier that despite the fact that we have a demographic challenge already in Europe and we are getting old and we need young people probably, and we would need well-organized immigration system like all developed countries like the United States, Canada and others they have. But still, I think we are not that yet with the a political maturity or acceptance to accept the fact that this is something what we would need to do in Europe. That simply we see that if you look at any demographic study, it's quite clear that in 5, 10, 15 years we would have a big problems with our European generation getting older. So I do not want to say that we will solve it between now and the end of the year, that's for sure not, but I think it's clearly issue which would be very much, and it will stay high on the agenda. Your input into this is very important because you have the direct experience, you know the situation in your neighborhood very well, and I think your representatives are very much on the topic and in this discussion, and I think it's very good if you also as a parliamentarian would be highlighting this issue, because it's really from the Commission point of view it's clearly a European issue and we have to find a European solution to this. Mr. Bonici was asking that I should be frank, what is working, what not, or how we can get the national parliaments more in the loop and in this discussion. Again, to be quite frank, I think that until like, I would say 2 years ago, there was not such a huge interest in European agenda in the national parliaments. It was more or less like the issue for the European Affairs Committee, and that was it. And I think now through the economic governance, it's changed. So now also I would say that the committees like Transport Committee or I would say Agriculture Committee or Cultural Committee, they are realizing that actually quite a lot is going on in the European Union, and they should also be more involved in following the agenda, in being active, in also looking like or analyzing how we can in a positive sense use our membership better or more, because very often then the opportunity is not used because it was not properly studied or grasped. And therefore, what I usually say in this context is that we are, of course, are going through the process in the Commission. We realize the national parliaments are very, very important allies, and we would be ready to do something what, like Stefan Fille was describing, the relationship with countries would like to join, that we would be ready more for more. So, I mean, as far as the national parliaments would be ready to go for the development of the relationship, the Commission, that far the Commission would be ready to go as well. Why I'm saying that? Because with your parliament, apparently, it's a different case, but in some cases, some member states have a situation that, like, when you try to, let's say, involve the national parliament more into the process, they somehow feel that you're trying to impose Commission on the parliamentary tradition. They have their own ways how they want to do it. So we also are very careful in trying to treat each national parliament individually, because we have different accent, different texting. So I don't think that, like, uniform approach here would work, because some parliaments, they welcome it, they are very happy about it. And parliaments, you know, are reserved, we need the time. I mean, we prefer to do it through our ministers, through the council. So it very much differs from the country to the country. What I think I very much appreciate you mentioned is that where we clearly, where it's clearly not working well so far is, and actually it would have the biggest influence upon the work of the Commission, this is the involvement in pre-legislative phase. Because if we go to the green books, white book, public consultations, this is actually where the subsidiary element, it's very, very much present, because you have a green book, more or less. The green book is, do we need to do this? What do you think, stakeholders, member state, public, do we need to legislate in this area at all? And then if the answer is yes, so then we are coming with the white book. So if the answer was yes, that we should legislate, how you think we should do it? Should we use this instrument? Should it be regulation, directive would be not? And this is something where of course we very much listen to the stakeholders. And the fact is that those who are very good are usually the professional associations, because they know that this, you know, law would be applicable to them. So they are very much involved. They are communicating, they're participating. NGOs very often, but we are, I mean, very rarely we get something from the national parliaments. You know, and that, of course, you would understand. Yeah, that sometimes it's like that. But you might be sure that if in these pre-legislative consultations, if we get an opinion from the national parliament, that it would be, you know, putting on the top of that opinions you receive, because it's very important. It's very representative. When I was asking national parliaments why this is the case, so they told me, look, we even don't know. We do not have that information that when which public consultation is launched, and it's very difficult for us to keep a track. We have very important national agenda. You know, help us with this. I mean, so we thought what we could do, and now and again, please, if it's not working, let me know. We are now sending, and we will be sending these yearly alerts for every public consultations to every national parliament. So we are going to launch the green book, white book, online consultations or stakeholder consultation on these issues. And if you think that it's something which is important on it, just please let us know. It doesn't have to be like a super study, just your feeling, you know, as a parliamentarian, this might be politically sensitive, difficult, we would prefer to do it in this way or that way. That you will see that this would very much help us also to get this yearly feeling on, because of course association and NGOs are behaving, of course, a little bit differently, because they have different agenda than the national parliament. So that would be, I think, very, very helpful. And if you would feel there is any problem with getting this information from us, so please let us know, and we would definitely try to correct it. Before I would go to the Lewis question concerning this 8 weeks and CSR. With the 8 weeks, there is a problem because it's in a treaty. So if we would like extend it over the 8 weeks, so then we can be taken to the court that actually we recognize the yellow card triggered, which was over the legal deadline. So what we try to do and how to, let's say, make sure that these 8 weeks are there for you. So we are waiting until the last day when all the translations are made. And once all the translations are made, so from the day when the last translation is sent out, from that moment we are actually calculating these 8 weeks. So it's fair for everyone. But again, I understand that sometimes it's challenging to be organized in that way. And therefore, what I'm usually suggesting is and we will be very happy also to maybe organize the expert consultation between your experts and the Commission, just to present you what is, I would say, our work plan. Not only the Commission work program, but more or less you would see the roadmap when, what we think the Commission would adopt. So you can like get mentally ready that this is a financial transaction tax. We don't like it. We know when it is coming, so we not miss the opportunity to send the negative opinion or something like that, because you can see the alerts which would be there for you, that this is something that we are very, very keen on and we don't want to miss it. So I think that would be possible. And I think or your representative in the Commission can do that, or your clerks could come there and have, like, before every legislative session, you know, such a quick overview, what could be the most important pieces of the legislation, especially particularly sensitive for Malta. Let's focus on it, and then you will not be surprised, and you can get organized. Concerning the country-specific recommendation, there, of course, it's such a learning process. Why they are, I would say, so sensitive, and I'm sure that you felt it here as well, but we also felt it very much in France over the pension reform. To find the level between, let's say, the recommendation and the degree of prescription, that how precise this should be. I think this would always be a little bit a difficult process. Because the country-specific recommendations being proposed, especially for the areas which are extremely politically sensitive, the areas which been postponed, avoided by the national governments for a long period of time, because if you have to tackle pension reform, if you pension age or school reform, I understand that for the government which is in power for 4 years, if it works and if it's not like really, really absolutely necessary to deal with it, you prefer just to do cosmetic changes or to postpone it or somehow politically manage it. What we have seen, and what I think is actually the positive thing, is that once you tackle the super sensitive issue, usually you trigger public debate. Usually it gets the politics in motion, that even the countries and the government which prefer to avoid it realize that this is the recommendation, all heads of state and government somehow endorse it, the public grasp it, so we have to deal with it. And you see that even in the countries where I'm sure otherwise it would not be tackled, this issue are debated and the process started. The question, and here I agree with you, is no surprise, which was the Lewis point this morning when we discussed this issue, and ownership, that you don't have feeling that this is, I mean, imposed upon the country or upon the parliament. And again, the learning process, what we did differently this year, and I think it was a little bit better perceived than the last year, was that we increased the number of bilateral consultations between the Commission and the experts, and what should be there, how it should be phrased. So I think in the end, there was not such a, I would say, big surprise and the first time. And the question would be, can we like completely avoid there could be a disagreement? Because sometimes, of course, the government representatives, they are representing the government, so they might have a little bit different views than the Commission and then the European Council, that this is really the issue which should be tackled. The good answer I've got, and this I don't know if we could completely replicate it in the Commission's work, because it requires a little bit more time, was that when the World Bank is working on some reform programs, but usually it's a longer process where the two teams sit together for a rather long time, and then the proposal in the end is a consensual agreement that this is what we both believe, that this is what should be done, and then in like it's financed by the World Bank. We are in a little bit faster speed, and we have 20 member states, so I don't think that would be completely possible to do it like this, but to increase the exposure, involvement, and the ownership, this is something what should be done, and if we can do it in a way that we create the opportunity, this will be discussed with national parliaments, with social partners, so also then the acceptability of those measures would be much better. But I think that we gradually go there because we realize that without your support and support of the ground, the recommendations stay on the paper, and this is what, of course, is not of use. And the last point, and thank you very much for your kind attention, the European Parliament election. I think if you look at the bigger picture, I think what we would see and what would be the new in the European Parliament, I think you cannot avoid the impression that you would have more fringe parties representative in the parliament on extreme left and extreme right. I mean, they are preying on the frustration, and I'm sure that there will be the protest votes in some member states, so that will probably happen. According to the latest opinion polls, and I hope they're right, it shouldn't be such a, let's say, tragic surprise that it will be like such increases as they've been predicted by some commentators. But the presence would be bigger, that's for sure. And therefore, I think it would be quite inevitable to have much closer cooperation between the key political forces, styled of the grand coalition support. And I think for the first time, kind of a creation of the coalition versus opposition debates in the European Parliament. Because now, sometimes it was also surprising for me because you didn't know who in the chamber actually supports you, who criticizes you, and I think it was very confusing not only for the commissioners but also for the public. And I think that battle of the ideas we would have this year, I think, would lead to the need to have much stronger political cooperation of the key pro-European political forces, which would, I would say, standardize also a little bit the relationship between the parliamentarians and the Commission as an executive, and hopefully also with a good translation into the position in the Council. And last thing concerning the EU project, I was very much impressed by the oncological center we have seen today. I think this is, I would say, a classic example how the EU money should be spent, that you actually not only upgrade the infrastructure for better services to the people, but actually can link it with university, with research, and make it like a regional hub for something which is very much needed. So I think that's a very good example. I hope that as it was planned, that everything could be completed on time. And concerning the new financial perspective, there the plan is, of course, that before summer we would like to have most of the partnership agreements signed. We also hope that partnership agreements and much closer cooperation between Commission and the member states would allow us to avoid the situation like we are today, that we are actually over the financial perspective term, and we have average spending or average absorption of 50% in the EU. And so, I mean, we will have super hectic 2 years because we have to spend what's left from the previous perspective and start to spend the new one. And of course, once you have to do this, there is an increased risk of some money being lost, which of course is difficult to explain to the citizens. So therefore, we hope that with this partnership agreement focus on fewer priorities, key projects where the citizens can see the change and value added, and I would say better coordination and earlier intervention when we see that there is a problem with absorbing of the money, that it will help us to prevent to have the same situation in 5-6 years' time as we have right now. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much, and thank you for your very kind attention. Thank you.
Vice President, thank you very much. It's been a very, very instructive hour that we've had together. We're very grateful that you found the time not only to visit our country but to visit our committee. And as I say, we've thrashed some very important points. I'm sure the The follow-up from this meeting will be very beneficial. In fact, our next Foreign and European Affairs meeting will be just a discussion of today's debates. And for sure we will get in touch with you or with your office regarding the calendar of subsidiarity and also this green book, because we are so far not aware of exactly how this works. So our office will get in touch with you.
Because I forgot one thing. It's, you know, I'm very much encouraging, and the President does the same, the commissioners to come to see the National Parliament. So, I mean, the inviters will come, you know. and in your place, I mean, you will have no problem to get a good attendance. So just send the invitation, and I'm sure my colleagues will not mind, you know. So, thank you.